And we're talking on the 24th, I believe, of February, in 1983, in her apartment in on
Methodist Retirement Center.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to begin with to know when you were born and where.
I was born October 14, 1902, mm-hmm. in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Uh-huh. My father was in state civil service in a power plant. Mm-hmm. My mother was a trained nurse, but from the Deaconess Hospital in Milwaukee. And so she never got an RN. She was supposed to be a deaconess, but she got married. Mm-hmm. So, and we lived around the state, and father had various civil service jobs. Later on, he was a power plant engineer at the School for the Blind in Janesville for 28 years. I was a civil service employee also. Father's efforts with his own engineering group got through the retirement system for state employees, of which he never benefited because he died from a heart attack. And I was the one that benefited from that.
Well, that's interesting.
I was a state employee for many years. Mm-hmm. I was the secretary at the University of Wisconsin.
Well, now don't go too fast. You grew up, went to high school. Did you
I went to the university? I came to the university as the secretary. I couldn't afford to go to school.
When was this?
This was in 1922. I had had my high school education, and I had 1 year at the Rock County Normal School, mm-hmm. County Normal.
Yes.
But I knew when I got through that, I did not want to be a country school teacher. Mm-hmm. And I'd had enough experience with the shorthand and typewriting, which I had had in high school and continued to use at the Rock County Normal. I did work for my principal as committee duties, mm-hmm. but I got practice. And I passed the civil service exam. And I had the sense to know that a one full-time job in one office, in the secretary of the faculty's office, was better than two half-time jobs in the ag school, which I had been offered. And it was in the secretary of the faculty's office in 1922, I think it was, that I first met Mr. Stanovich. Mm-hmm. He had been away and had come back that year. He had come first of all to the faculty in 1907, a Harvard PhD in 1906, and a travel fellowship for a whole year in Europe, and he took his mother to Europe for the year. And in 1907, he came here as a member of the French faculty, Romance Language Department at the time. Well, I got to know everybody on the faculty. In fact, I got teased because I wanted to know who everybody was. And at Christmas, we had slam presents. And the first year, I got a toy doll to keep on my desk, a man.
Uh-huh.
And the second year, because I found out then that I could take a course or two a semester, we worked overtime only when there were things that had to be done, registration and exam time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so my first course, because I liked the Italian professor, was Italian. And then I took some more work of that kind and some English. And then I found out that the girl who was the secretary in the French department was leaving. She was tired of it, and she was going to Europe. And I asked for the job. And Mr. Stanovich said, well, Adeline Holfeld, Dr. Holfeld's daughter-in-law, mm-hmm. was the assistant in the office and had first chance. And I said, well, what if she doesn't pass the promotion exam? It had never occurred to him that she wouldn't, but she didn't, and I did, and I got the job. And then I went to the French house a great deal. You know about our French house.
Yes, I've read
it's
the
a wonderful,
history of it.
Wonderful thing. And it's still going strong. I don't go anymore because it's too hard of access there. But I still support it from time to time. And then I got the job, and learned more French and became and more Italian, and I picked up a wee bit of Spanish. I said I never would starve. I didn't have a course in Spanish, but I typed a lot of stuff, you know, and when you have the three together, they're quite related.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I coached somebody in later years for a reading knowledge test in Spanish.
Huh.
He was having problems with prepositions, and I knew that, and I knew how I could correct his trouble. And he passed his reading knowledge exam.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Mm. Well, Casimir and I began, after several years, a newsletter that went out to our old major students in French and old colleagues who were gone, you know, to other institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept that up for many, many years. And then after he died in 1953, I went back to a university office because I didn't want to teach. I didn't prepare to teach. I got my degree in January of 36, so I belonged to the class of 36.
You took enough courses, so you got a degree?
Over 14 years.
Yes.
But only one semester of that time did I take a full 15-hour program. The rest of the time it was part-time. I was trying to run a house, and we were very socially-minded people. We did a great deal to make the people, especially the foreign students in our department, the French people, who were here on temporary basis, to teach conversation and to go on with their own graduate work in whatever field they chose.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did a lot of entertaining, and I enjoyed it very much. This was for the major holidays. If we were here at Christmas time, we always had a big party.
Mm-hmm.
We always had gifts for Thanksgiving as students. And usually my Christmas gift from my husband, in fact every year, was a trip to the Modern Language Association.
Yeah.
We would meet my old teachers, his old colleagues, our old students, and had a wonderful time.
Did many wives go to those meetings?
No, I was the only one that went. But I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather have done that than anything you could dream up.
Well, of course, you knew the students.
I knew the students, I knew the faculty.
Mm.
And I had used, the very first trip to one was the first year I was married, and December 1933. Our wedding trip was in Europe, for my husband had leave. And we left early in February, and we were married the 3rd of February, 33. And went straight to Europe via Washington and New York on a ship. And we were gone the whole spring semester and the whole summer.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had to come back and get a house and pick up our furniture, which had been stored around various places. And I shouldn't use "and." I've heard myself on the tape.
Everybody does.
And it's terrible.
Mm.
But My main interest as my husband's wife was to be with his friends and to keep his friendships going. They were all older than I.
Mm-hmm.
One man is in this retirement center now, Mr. Bert Miller. He was a year older than Casimir. Casimir would have been 99 last fall.
Was this Mr. Miller in the French department also?
No.
Oh.
He was power and light.
Oh, I see.
And various other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I also changed my church when I married. I married into the University Methodist Church because my husband was a founding father. And I was Lutheran. I belonged to Luther Memorial, and I just moved up the street one block. So I was meeting a lot of new people. There were a lot of faculty people in that group, some of whose names I knew. When we'd go to a faculty party, I'd have to look behind the woman to see the man, And then I know who they were, yeah, because I knew most of the men. I knew all that faculty for a long time. And there goes my aunt again. But three times my husband and I went to Europe for that length of time. 33, 39, we were caught over there by the war. But we got home after war was declared in Europe. We got home safely. And then we went back in 51. And then my husband died in 53. He was 69. And in his picture's over there,
yes,
and you see as
a nice
medal,
picture.
That's
yeah.
the Legion of Honor of the French.
Mm-hmm.
Between us, we had three honors. I was honored with the Palmes Académiques, which is usually given only to teachers. But they thought the husband of one of our French girls was the consul general. And he and we got well acquainted in France in 39.
Mm-hmm.
No, in 51. And of course we had known her long before that. But he decided, in fact he had already put my name in for the, it's a little purple ribbon decoration.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband had the Legion of Honor, which he got in 49. He had already been given the Palms years before. I don't remember when. And he and Julian Harris got the Legion of Honor the same year. And we had a big joint party at
mm-hmm.
the University Club. I got the Palms Académiques in 1952. And I was very proud. My husband said, you can't accept it. And I said, you don't refuse that sort of thing.
Why did you say you couldn't accept it?
Because Laura Johnson, who was a very prominent teacher in our department, had not yet been honored. And she was the teacher of teachers of French. And a very fine person on the faculty for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and you really, you have no right to that, you haven't done enough. But they thought that I had done enough keeping the letter going, and I kept that letter going after Casimir's death.
Mm-hmm.
When my husband died, I was high and dry. I had no children. We were too well along in years by the time we discovered we probably wouldn't have a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't adopt. My sister had three and needed help financially.
Mm-hmm.
And I was offered a job as secretary of the speech and hearing clinic at the university, which was a lifesaver for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was thrown with young people. I belonged to umpteen organizations, but I was not going to be caught up as an organization woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not going to play bridge every day. I needed something, and I got it in that department. My boss at the time, he and his wife were younger than I, quite a bit younger,
mm-hmm.
very kind to me. He didn't quite know what to do with a faculty wife, a faculty widow, you know, as
yeah.
a secretary. But he always said, I ran the clinic, and I kept him organized. He was a genius. And very temperamental.
Who was that?
Jack Irwin.
Hmm.
Now he left quite a while ago, and he has since retired. And so I would have sworn he would never have retired. I mean, never left the university here.
Hmm.
I'll tell you a funny story about him that he told me. President Fred,
mm-hmm.
was talking in the rain to one of our major students in front of Bascom on the shelter one day. And he was kind and asked her what department she was a student in.
Yeah.
And she told him how much she liked Dr. Irwin as a professor. He really was a genius. He is a very splendid person.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Fred said, Irwin cost me the price of a good cow. to bring him back here. He'd been at Wisconsin for his doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went to teach at the University of Washington. But to get him back here as director of the speech clinic, he said he cost me the price of a good cow. So you see where Dr. Fred's mind was in the ag school.
Values, yes.
The ag school. Well, I had 10 years in the speech clinic. I went back before that, though we lost our secretary in French one fall, just as school was starting. And that Julian Harris was the chairman at that time. Her husband had got his degree in another field and a good job, and so they left. And they couldn't find anyone in civil service who would take the job.
Mm.
So I went back for a whole semester. I left the house before my husband did in the morning. And we had lunch at the university club.
Oh.
And that settled it. We finally got a girl from one of the records offices who knew a little French. It was an impossible place to work if you didn't have some acquaintance with French, even though by that time the department had split. Spanish had its own secretary, its own department. Mm-hmm. I had Italian and French. And I spoke, Julian, when he was explaining me to the dean that I wouldn't be in the retirement system, you know, anymore, or anything like that. That hadn't started yet for state employees. Neither had Social Security. I can't remember the exact date. But he said, she speaks better French than many of our assistants do. Which was quite
applauded,
a nice thing.
Isn't it? So this was, while you were married, you only
yes.
worked that one semester.
That was right.
I see, yes.
But I was very active all during the war years as a volunteer. And I worked either for the Ration Board or for the Red Cross. And I was a staff assistant in Red Cross. I took their course.
Mm-hmm.
All during the war years, and I was in the food rationing of the Ration Board.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it thoroughly. We had an honest board. We never had scandal in the Dane County Ration Board. My husband just went back to typing his own things at home that he needed typed, that I used to do.
You had been doing that.
I had been doing. And from
did
there
he mind that?
No, he didn't mind. He'd been used to running the hunt and peck typing.
Uh-huh.
So, I should mention we were both cat lovers. My birthday present the first year we were married was from one of his old student and her boyfriend. She was a good friend of mine too,
mm-hmm.
and they were later married. A big gray kitty
yeah.
named Molière. For the course that she had taken with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And all during the war years, of course, that cat got, he'd either sit in my lap with a hunk of Red Cross wool when I was knitting,
uh-huh.
or else try to squeeze in behind my husband, or else sit as close to the fireplace as he could to keep warm.
Yeah.
Well, he lived 14 years. And then my husband said, well, we brought up one child, let's not start on the grandchildren.
So you didn't have any more?
I didn't have any more. We didn't have cat litter at that time, and the sandboxes were heavy, and they were in the basement.
Mm.
So we did gardening together. We entertained the French people a lot. And we belonged to the University Heights Poetry Reading Club.
Oh, did you?
Yes. That's about faded out now. Mrs. Noland tried to keep it going in later years.
Mm-hmm.
But all the old-timers were gone. Oh, it was a very interesting group.
The Petersons were members
yes,
of that.
Yes, did you know them?
No, but I've been interviewing some people in the biochemistry department.
Oh,
who
are they?
Well, Mr. Bauman and I and Evelyn Steenbach. And
oh, I know Evelyn quite well.
You do, uh-huh.
Yes. And we knew the Petersons very well.
And I'll be at Frank Strong.
Oh, yes. I knew Frank's wife, ex-wife.
Uh-huh.
I don't, if he's married now, I don't know her.
I believe he is, but she's ill.
But Anne is the one I knew.
I see.
And she really was somebody.
Hmm.
She's got a very odd personality, if you've ever met Anne. But she's a very busy woman. Well, for years, I kept up this newsletter, even when I was in the French in the speech and hearing clinic.
You'd have to go to the French department to
no,
get the material.
I got the material, and it was, I knew when I could do it in my own office. And my boss, Dr. Irwin, didn't care. He knew I wouldn't do anything if I had my own job to do. I wouldn't do anything extra.
Mm-hmm.
But there were lots of times when I just sat at my desk.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to take a promotional exam to get that job, and I was scared green. And when I went into it, it was 3 weeks after my husband died. A letter from Dr. Weaver, Andrew Weaver, had followed me to Tennessee, where my husband's buried,
mm-hmm.
and come back, and my mailman knew I was back, and instead of sending it back, he knew that he brought it to me, offering me the job in their department, thinking I might want to go back to a job.
Did you need the job for money?
I didn't know. I didn't think so, but I needed to be occupied with something interesting.
So that was the main reason.
And I was, my husband's estate wasn't settled yet.
Uh-huh.
It took 3 or 4 months more before that. Julian Harris's brother was my husband's trust officer, Richard Marshall, at First Wisconsin Bank.
Was that Betty
Betty's
Harris's?
Brother.
Mm-hmm.
Betty's brother. And so they cleared my checking account immediately, and it didn't take long, you know, before everything was settled. They're my executors too.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was perfect.
Were you concerned about your financial future?
No,
my
back neighbors were, because at that time they printed in the paper people's estates.
Yes, I saw the news clipping, and it said $6,000,
yes.
I think.
Oh, did you see that?
It's in his file.
Oh,
yeah.
My, for heaven's sakes. Well, that didn't include any annuities or any, he had quite a lot of investments, some of which were not good.
Mm-hmm.
But he had war insurance, which was still hanging on,
mm-hmm.
and annuity from Northwest Mutual, which I have for life, his own retirement, which I have for life.
Yeah.
And then I got later on, I tried to console. These were Jewish people, and they were very pleasant. We had a joint lot. I was a second
Your
lot.
Neighbors, yes.
From the corner.
Where is it?
Commonwealth Avenue. And my lot was the second from a pie-shaped corner.
Mm-hmm.
And these people were right back at me. They had a second lot from a corner, too.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really concerned about me, and I said, don't worry, because that didn't include an awful lot of what I've got.
Mm. Yes, I wondered. I'm glad to hear that, too.
And then I had my house, you know?
Yeah.
So, I was left. I'm left off comfortably now, and then, of course, when I went back to work, I got in Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
So unless the rents go up here, out of sight.
Yeah.
And I've been assured, I don't think I'll ever have a problem. What there'll be left afterwards will be for my niece,
mm-hmm.
and two nephews, my sister's children,
mm-hmm.
will depend completely on what my health is. If I have to go in the healthcare center, I will pay as long as I can, and then I'll be taken care of in this situation. This is a wonderful place to live. And I've known Dick Edwards. I want to talk more about my volunteer work. Because in addition to that, I worked as soon as I could with the hospital auxiliary. I had worked while I was married with the Methodist Hospital Service League, which met once a month in the old brick building, which was on the corner of Washington Avenue and Henry Street,
mm-hmm.
before the new wing of the hospital was built. And we did sewing and dressings for the hospital. And my service actually goes back about 40 years with the hospital.
Do you still do it?
Yes, mm-hmm. but now I can't do active service, and I knit baby sweaters for the hospital auxiliary.
Mm.
They are either sold here or they're sold at the gift shop.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're sold here, the check goes to the auxiliary.
Mm-hmm.
I donate that. It's one way that I can help. I also belong to the hospital Century Club,
mm-hmm.
which was a yearly donation.
Mm-hmm.
I invested money myself while I was working, when I got a pretty good income from my husband's annuities, and I got a very good salary at the university. Until I decided in 63, I stopped working. I worked 10 years in the speech clinic. And we had moved out of Bascom by that time. Our office was on the fourth floor, and you walked up in those days. And we moved to the bank building at Park and University. And now they're way out on the lakeshore.
Was this part of the hospital?
No, it was part of the speech department until later on it became its own entity.
Oh, that's why Andrew Weaver.
Yes.
Yeah.
It became its own entity.
Well,
after I stopped working at the clinic in 63, I just couldn't take that piled up desk. And I had an inner office at that time,
mm-hmm.
no outside windows. And when I'd been on the fourth floor of Bascom, I could see clear to the west end of the lake.
Oh,
gorgeous
yeah.
sunsets, gorgeous scenery.
Yeah.
And also very pleasant people. I didn't go back to the French department when I could have, because I wanted to keep out of feuds. And there were feuds. When my husband died, Dr. Fred wrote me the loveliest letter. My husband was known for pouring oil on troubled waters in faculty meetings. And I thought nobody could have said anything nicer.
Oh, he actually said that.
Fred said that.
In his letter.
Yes.
Hmm. These were, in the 50s and 40s, when Alex Croft came, was that the principal case of them, or did they exist earlier too?
Oh, long before Alex was there. Really from scratch. We had one member, this should be confidential. I mean, I won't name a name.
Yeah.
We had one member of the department who detested Professor Smith. He was a fanatic Catholic. And he didn't like Hugh Smith, and he didn't like some other members, but he did like my husband.
Mm-hmm.
I won't tell you who he was.
Was this a man who left in the 40s?
No.
Oh, because I know Julian Harris spoke a great deal about, I'm trying to remember his name. Very difficult man.
Well, the difficult man was Fred Gillen.
Yes, that's right.
But he died.
I see.
He didn't leave, he died.
I'm going to turn the tape.
The last 20 years, I've been very active in the Methodist Hospital Auxiliary.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in the coffee shop. I waited on table. I cashiered for the coffee shop. I worked in the gift shop. I worked on the reception desk. I was asked to be the president of the auxiliary one year. But I knew what that would involve. I would have to give up practically everything outside, because at that time we did not have an executive director of volunteers, which we have now. And I just was not willing, and I said no, I would not be. And I backed out of, I belonged to AUW,
mm-hmm.
and I backed out of the chairmanship of that. I woke up every, that was to take place, that was to begin the year after I quit work at the university
mm-hmm.
in 64. I woke up every morning with a tummy ache.
Yeah.
And I knew that I was getting into the wrong thing. I had practically all my committee chairmen appointed.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
And I wrote a note to the vice president, the first vice president, and discovered she was in the hospital with an appendix.
Mm-hmm.
And she hated me for years. She couldn't forgive me for backing out of
mm-hmm.
something and leaving her. I didn't know she was sick.
I see. Oh, dear.
Or I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
I would have been a little more cautious, you
yeah.
know. But I was so relieved, and I've been on the State Board of AUW when Grace Severinghouse was state president, Dr. Severinghouse's widow, who is still living. And I've been on the local board several times. I still am a member of AUW, but I am only going to the meetings of the mass media group, which are here in this building, because Jesse McCants, who is the chairman of that group, lives here
mm-hmm.
and finds it hard to go out. And I find that group very interesting.
Uh-huh.
It's a small group.
I'd like to go back and ask you some questions
sure.
about.
I wish you would, because I've rambled so much.
Well, this has given the general picture of the sort
well,
of overall picture,
the reason
and that's
I
useful.
I had to stop active being on active duty at the hospital, which I just loved,
mm-hmm.
was I had two severe surgeries. I had
oh.
a hip joint replacement from arthritis,
uh-huh.
and would have to use a walker for quite a while. And then I had a colostomy
mm.
in 1979. Luckily, I was put all together again after several months. But in between, when I was recuperating from that here, I got up from the couch one day in a hurry to answer the telephone. And I fell in the middle of the floor here.
Mm.
Now we have two signal cords for help,
mm-hmm.
one in the bedroom, one in the bathroom.
Mm.
But I couldn't even yank down the telephone. I wasn't quite near. And I could move everything, but I couldn't raise myself.
Mm.
I couldn't get up. So I lay here and yelled. And my across the hall neighbor's husband was home and heard me and called the desk. And before I knew it, on a split second, the nurse was here, the chief maintenance man was here to
mm-hmm.
do anything he could. A wheelchair was here for somebody to take me back to the hospital. We have the most marvelous staff in this place.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah.
So,
comforting.
And after that, I just, the last work I did over there was early of March of 79.
Yeah.
And I had something happen I had blood where there shouldn't be blood, quantity. And I went to the hospital. My doctor was out of town.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the clinic, I mean. And I went and worked that day. But I had an appointment. I guess this was Thursday or Friday. Probably a Friday. And I went to work that day. I had an appointment for another doctor on Saturday morning. And I learned that I had to have an x-ray,
mm-hmm.
which I had the next week. Well, I just barely lived out that day. I was cashiering
mm-hmm.
at the hospital coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
I was so weak, I just couldn't see straight. I had no pain, but I was just plain weak.
Wow.
And then I came up with a colostomy.
Yeah, goodness.
With a very good surgeon.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to know when you first came here to work, was it at all unusual for you? Where did you live? I mean, you were a single. This was 1922.
I grew up. Let me go a little farther back. From Chippewa Falls, where I was born, and where my father and mother were both, or had been, and my father was on the staff of the Northern Colony and Training School, which is
mm-hmm.
the state institution.
Yeah.
Then father went as night engineer to the prison at Wapan.
Yeah.
We were there 4 years. Then he, one of the men there, one of the main men, went to Janesville as head of the School for the Blind. He took father along as his engineer.
Yeah.
And I went all through my schooling at Janesville. That is, I guess I'd had first grade in Wapan. I know I'd had kindergarten there.
Well, what made you decide to come to Madison?
Because I didn't want to. I took a civil service exam for a stenographic job.
And then there were jobs announced.
There was nothing. I had, yes. I went back to Janesville and stayed until I got notice that I could come for an interview.
Where did you live when you first came here?
The YWCA, and I'm so glad you mentioned that. I went to the Y when it was still on State Street in 1922,
mm-hmm.
and I knew a YW was safe. My mother had not been well mentally, and after years and years, she ended up at Verona in the county hospital, and she died there. Father stayed on until 1937. He had a heart attack. He stayed on in Janesville. He lived at the School for the Blind. He was 73. And then he came up here and lived with my husband and me.
I see.
I had one sister. My husband was an only child.
Uh-huh.
My husband's mother's family were Tennessee Scotch.
Yeah.
With a property that was a land grant from the Revolution. She was a DAR. His father had come to this country as a teacher. He was half Alsatian and half Polish.
I want to know about, because when you came to Madison, you lived in, how long did you live in the YWCA?
I lived there 6 weeks, and then my mother moved here.
Oh, I see. So you
and
lived with her.
My mother and my sister, yes.
In an apartment.
We lived in an apartment.
Uh-huh.
I think the first one was on Lake Street. I'm not sure. Mother moved around a good deal.
So, and your office was in Bascom Hall.
Yes.
So did you get to know people like Glenn Frank when he came?
Oh, that was long after,
yes
that
was through, he came in 1925.
Yes.
I thought you were married in 1930.
Yes, I was. Now, did Frank
he
come
came in
25,
yes.
Well, I knew who he was.
I see, but you didn't have much.
But I didn't know him personally. Of course, I was in the building. I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was married and went to University League, I met Mrs. Frank.
Uh-huh.
And somebody said to Mrs. Frank, "Do you know Mrs. Stanovich?"
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Oh, yes, she's the one that caught the uncatchable bachelor." And she said it loud enough so a lot of the people in the big hall where we were heard her.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't bother me because
that's rather nice.
Gassmer's picture had been in the State Journal New Year's edition for years.
Uh-huh.
He and Emil Truog and Dr. K, whose widow is in our health center. And the Truogs are both gone. But they were eligible bachelors living at the university club.
That's where your husband lived?
Yes.
Why didn't he marry sooner?
That's what I'd like to know. I'll tell you, there was one woman I was jealous of who was an assistant in another department in the university. And she had her claws out for him.
Yeah.
And so did I.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I felt he was a good man going to waste.
Yeah.
19 years between us, but I was past 30 and he was just past 49 when we were married. And he was a very delightful man, very conservative, very quiet, but we got well acquainted at the French House. And then we liked each other. The only thing we didn't have in common, and I didn't really discover that because he always took somebody to the concerts. At the Stock Pavilion. And I was always there with friends of mine.
Yeah.
And we'd always look to see who Casimir had in tow.
Yes.
He used it to repay dinner dates. He was a very eligible bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
So And I never could quite figure out why he hadn't married the daughter of Charles Forrester Smith, Annabelle, who married Reverend Blakeman, who was a first pastor of the University Methodist Church. The Smith family had come here. He was in classics.
Yeah.
And they had lived next to each other, next to the Stanoviches on the Vanderbilt campus, where my husband's father was a teacher.
But he hadn't married her.
And then there was another very good friend, Mary Peacock, with whom I corresponded after Casimir's death for years until Mary died, and I still correspond with her family, not children, a sister, in Chattanooga. But they were very close friends, and I never asked Casimir definitely why he didn't.
Yeah.
I mentioned Mary as a possibility, and he said, well, I think my mother would have liked her. He was very much a mother's boy. He was an only child.
I see.
His father died when he was 6 years old.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's
Mrs.
true.
Mrs. Holfeld was another. Dr. Holfeld replaced Casimir's father at Vanderbilt when Casimir was six in 1889 or 90. And they just back from Germany. And then they came here in the 90s.
I see. That's why he came
yes.
here then, presumably, because they were here.
Well, no. Professor Hugh Smith was at Harvard.
Oh, I see.
Getting a degree, not a PhD. He had a master's when Casimir was a graduate student there. And so was Professor Schlatter, who's been dead for a long time. Bunker Schlatter.
So they
Janus.
Knew about
yes.
him. I see.
They
invited
there
him out here.
At Cambridge, and it was through Smith that Casimir was offered the job.
And
he was a brilliant person.
You say you had your claws out for him too. Did you take the initiative at all? And
well, I guess the department thought I did. When it was announced, Casper had told the French House early in December of 32. We all knew he had leave coming up the next semester. That he had already got his ticket. His passage, because the price would go up after a certain time.
Yeah.
And we'd been together, we'd gone out together, and we'd seen quite a lot of each other. I'd had him over for dinner with other people from the department, the Berkowitzes from Spanish, they would celebrate his birthday on my birthday. They were a month apart. On the same day, the 14th.
Yeah.
It was the 14th of September, mine the 14th of October. But in those days, school didn't start until late September.
I see. Yeah.
He was usually either abroad or in the South at home. And so they would celebrate birthdays together. So we get very close to each other, you know. But he didn't say anything.
Yeah.
And I thought, good Lord, this is really
going
to be terrible.
Because
I'm not
going
to go.
Yeah.
And I had several other good reasons for thinking that he really did care for me. And although, as I say, he was very conservative, he was not a very outgoing person, affectionately. And we went to the opera Faust, given by a local group. On the 9th of December. And on the way home, we stopped at a drugstore that was across from the old University Hospital. I lived down Lee Court, which runs just off Orchard Street, in the house with several of the university people. And we finally turned the lights on at the drugstore, and Casimir walked me back home. And he said, you know, those tickets were for two.
That was his proposal.
That was my proposal. He didn't say, do you want to go?
Wonderful.
And I almost dropped in my tracks. Almost. My best friend was living in that apartment building with me. It was not a building, it was a private house. And I said, I have to tell Elda. And he said, we're not going to tell anybody until after the holidays. Because we were leaving early in February. in January, we did announce it. This was the beginning of the Depression, you see. Mm. Casimir had told Hugh Smith 2 weeks before he asked me.
Yeah, I see.
And I was the department secretary. 2 weeks ahead, he told me. Well, we had a department party at the University Club, a dinner.
The department honoring
yes.
you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that wasn't it. Hugh Smith got up. It was just a party.
Mm.
And he said, because of the Depression, we're having some consolidation in the department. And then he announced our engagement. One man in the department, whom I had bawled out for forgetting his office key once too often, he was surprised.
Yeah.
Nobody else was surprised.
Yeah.
Every time anybody came to look for me, I'd been sitting in Casimir's office.
Did the department, you'd been a secretary of the department, did the wives accept you as a...
Yes. I was included in all the department parties.
Mm-hmm.
When the Smiths had a reception, I was always there.
Was there much of any social division of the department? I know the Harrises seem to have moved in rather...
Well, it was they were town people, you know. I mean, Betty was town.
Yes.
She was also gone because of her father.
Yes.
Betty is a lovely woman.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when her mother died, I went to her mother's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
It was at their house on Gilman Street.
Mm-hmm.
And Casper couldn't go, and I went. No, I think Casper was dead by that time. But I know I went.
But were you in the same social circle
no,
with
we
them?
No, we were main plain faculty.
Mm.
We had a lot of faculty friends.
Yeah. Who were some of your best friends?
Well, the Scheidlers and the Bradleys, especially Foster.
Harold Bradley?
Foster Bradley.
Oh.
R.F. Bradley.
Uh-huh.
And the Michelles, who lived in our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
They've all been dead and gone for years. Mrs. Bradley is still living with a daughter now in Virginia. And all the Milligans were good friends. In later years, Cools in Spanish, and the Ortegas were good friends, and the Solalindes were good friends.
Mm-hmm.
We belonged to the University Heights, not only the Poetry Club, the old West End Club.
What was that?
It's still going strong. It's a social group with speakers, usually from its own membership. It's a very large group.
Mm-hmm.
I belonged until just last year, and
really?
I finally, because I just, I'm quite handicapped walking.
Mm.
I had a slight stroke that time when I fell up there. Nothing showed in any of the tests, and the doctor, the neurologist thought it had hit my center of balance, but I'm dizzy a great deal of the time.
Is this a university club, or is it both?
No, it was a... It's really a town and gown. It was university to start with.
Uh-huh.
But now it has, I guess most of the people are university people. But the West End Club.
Is it mostly LNS or language people?
No, it's everything. Everything. Hmm. It was called the University West End Club. And for years, we met in each other's homes.
Mm-hmm.
Until finally it got to the point where it grew. So I know that Mr. Schaefer, who was head of the Historical Society at that time,
mm-hmm.
was the speaker at a meeting at my house, and we thought there'd be about 50 people.
Yeah.
And the university would deliver folding chairs and come back and get them.
Goodness.
Without a charge in those days.
That's interesting.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. But
and
you had to cook for them.
And there were 75 that time.
Good. And did you have to cook for them all?
We had just light refreshments.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Did your husband belong to a dining club?
No, he didn't. But we had the University Club a great deal.
Yeah. Did he not belong to a dining club on principle?
No, it was just there weren't that many. when we were first married.
Uh-huh.
And we had a lot of church activities too. I was very active in the church.
Yeah.
I was chairman of the of a circle for several years. I was president of the Women's Society.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a hard time that year because that was the year when the national organization made it necessary that we reshuffle our circle membership every year.
Hmm.
Or every 2 years, I guess it was. And I had belonged to the most exclusive group of women at University Church, which was much bigger in those days.
Hmm.
They were better educated. They were more financially secure.
I see, yeah.
And had better homes and that sort of thing. But National declared we had to reshuffle circles so that we were
representative of everybody. Mm-hmm.
And I had to force that thing through.
Mm.
I believed in it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I didn't want to do it. I hated to leave my own circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I had a neighbor who was so adamant against it.
Was that somebody in the university?
She was a faculty wife.
Who was that?
Mrs. Franz Oust.
Oh.
She and her husband have both been dead for quite a long time. And she couldn't see the point.
Mm.
And I just kept, and even Franz, who drove me down either to it must have been down to a meeting or something one day, argued about it with me, and I said, Franz, this has got to come. It's the only democratic thing you can do. And we're a Christian group.
Hmm.
And we found the other people were very nice women. You know.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
Well, yes. How much time did your husband spend in his work, or was he the sort that worked evenings?
Oh, he was a workaholic.
He was.
He prepared for every class day, every evening, no matter how often he taught the course.
Hmm.
His specialty was 16th and 17th century French.
Uh-huh.
I wrote the last BA thesis in the French department.
Hmm.
And I wrote it on a poetess of the 16th century,
mm-hmm.
Louise Labe, L-A-B-E.
Mm-hmm.
I still have it. I got it. The university library gave all the BAs back. And they didn't have room for that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
They were not valuable. But my husband used the notes I had from my thesis for years in his own course.
So it was a good thesis.
But he wouldn't grade it.
Mm.
He asked Professor Giese, who was a member of our department, to read it and grade it. He was afraid that, you know, that he wouldn't do me justice.
Yeah.
And he was afraid he'd hurt my feelings.
What grade did you get on it?
I got an A.
Good.
And once I wrote a paper, it was 2 pages double-spaced typed for a whole extra credit in art history.
Mm-hmm.
I had 3 courses under Oscar Hagen.
Mm.
He was the most fabulous teacher. And Fritz Joachim was an assistant and did the grading. I chose Greek vase painting.
Hmm.
And I took a tourist through a factory where they were doing this sort of thing.
Oh, good idea, yeah.
And I got an A double plus on the paper and a whole credit. And I bragged to Professor Scheidler. I was still a secretary in the department. And he said, I will show you what a term paper looks like. And he brought out something that thick.
But I'm surprised a professor would think that thickness and quality were necessarily synonymous. But
no, he wanted quality too. Schadler was
sure
a very, very good teacher, but he was a dull teacher. Mm. Dull. I never had him in the course.
Did you have Tom Rogers in the course?
Sam.
Sam, yes. Excuse me.
No, I knew Sam very well, but I didn't have him. Mm. I wish I had. I had 16th century, 17th century, and 19th century.
And how about Julian Harris? Did you have him?
No, he taught old French.
Yeah. He wasn't promoted for years and apparently
Was this there were several others. Germain Mercier was not promoted from assistant professor.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sad. She was a marvelous teacher. She and her sister live here.
Why was that, that she wasn't promoted?
She didn't publish.
Was this true of Julian, too? Was that?
I don't know. He published in later years.
Mm.
Professor Lyon in history in Spanish stayed an assistant professor all his life.
Goodness.
It was sad.
Because he didn't publish?
Yes.
Was he a good teacher?
I think he was thorough, but not interesting. Mm-hmm. I never had a question.
That's unusual. That wouldn't happen now.
No.
I mean, people would either leave or be promoted.
So, any more questions?
I just, you say your husband was a workaholic. Of course,
that
you knew all this when you married
not
him.
Not completely.
Uh-huh.
The only thing that he and I didn't see eye to eye on was music.
Hmm.
But in the evenings, if there was something on the radio, we didn't have TV in those years, he would remember my programs. I knew he couldn't stand the rhythm of jazz. Well, I didn't like jazz. I like classical music.
Mm-hmm.
And he would remember and get up and turn on the radio if I was doing something else.
Hmm.
I was also a pianist. I had had lessons as a child.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't get a good piano until I still had my own family piano for many years after Casimir died. And then my tuner told me I just had, I went back in about 1937 and took piano lessons. This was not long after we were, I took more lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And I, my teacher was had a lot of adult students and was the sponsor of Schubert Club. And she got me into Schubert Club. And then I had, I joined in 1938, one of the music clubs in town. It was a federated club at that time. It no longer is.
Mm.
I dropped out last year because it was too hard for me to go.
Uh-huh.
Although Ann Crow, when they were in town, Dr. Crow's wife, would come and get me and take me to meetings after I lived
is
there.
Is she a pianist also?
She's a oboist.
Hmm.
And Jim plays viola or violin? Viola, I think.
You say you were disagreed music. He didn't care for music so
he
much.
Didn't
is that what
hear
you're saying?
It as music.
Oh, I see.
Mrs. Holfeld, when he was 6 years old, tried to teach him piano.
Uh-huh.
And it just didn't
he was tone deaf.
Tone deaf.
But you say he went to the concerts.
Yes, as a matter of duty.
Yeah.
And once, when we were in Paris, he took me to hear Casa d'Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And we had had lunch with that man at the Kuhn's house here. Professor
Kuhn
was in music school. And Mrs. Kuhn's mother had been the head of our French house for a while.
Yeah.
And we were at lunch with him. Casper said, I enjoyed the concert, but I don't know why.
Hmm.
And then I insisted he take me to hear the Brandenburg series, all six in two different groups. Not one after the other, but broken up. Conducted by Enesco, George Enesco in Paris. I didn't want to go across town alone. He went once.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you get somebody else to go to the next concert. I can't take any more of this.
That's interesting.
Uh-huh,
I wonder if it was the orchestra versus the piano, or Bach versus...
No, I don't... he could shut his ears to me.
Mm.
He could shut his ears to things, but... I guess it maybe was sitting still that long and listening to things that didn't mean anything to him.
So you enjoyed all of the entertaining, and you know women nowadays are reluctant to do this for their.
I loved it.
Was this you loved it because you had not been married for during your 20s and it was nice to be.
I suppose so.
I guess I better.
But my husband was this very social man.
Uh-huh.
I mean, his mother. Being a Southerner, when she came up here to live with him about 1910 or 11, everybody who came to call on Sunday afternoon was invited to stay for supper.
I see.
And he was always afraid when we started out entertaining that I would run out of something.
Mm-hmm.
We did once. It was an extremely hot day. And the Smiths and we exchanged, either they would entertain the whole department in the fall and we would in the spring, or the other way around.
Uh-huh.
And this was a very hot day, and I had punch with sherbet and ginger ale. We never served liquor to students.
Mm.
Well, these were not all students, these were adults, but even so, we were terrible. And I had to send
here. You hadn't thought of going to college, is that
no,
right?
No, I had wanted to.
But you couldn't afford it.
But I couldn't afford it.
But was your idea to save up money in order to then
no,
go?
I was just trying to earn a living at that time. My father and mother were really broken up as a family.
Mm-hmm.
I had one sister. She was in high school when I first came. And she married young and had three lovely children, all of whom are divorced. And my poor brother-in-law is still alive. He's 80 as I am. I was 80 last October. Mark Curtis, 85 and a half.
Did you... what was it? Oh, you said in the office, that in the secretary of the faculty, that you handled everything, the registration and...
We had transfer students from the First World War, bonus students. We had transfer students from other schools who had had a couple of years maybe somewhere else wanted to come in.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have the graduate transfers into the graduate school. That admission was through the graduate office. We had about everything else.
You said didn't you say you handled registration and, or was that just for those students?
That was just for those
students.
Oh,
I see, okay.
Their
transcripts
from the other schools had to be approved.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had all the rooms and timetable committee, and my husband was in charge of rooms and timetables for the women's language department.
I see.
So he would come down to correct proof.
That's how you
and
got
we
to.
Had their, we had the timesheets, I've forgotten what they were called. Instructional reports is what they were called.
Mm.
Each faculty member made out one for each semester.
Yeah.
The time they put in on whatever they did. And research work and all of that.
What time is it now?
It's about 10 to 12.
Oh, well, we better stop then.
I think we'd have better.
Well, thank you very much.